Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use in cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being my guest today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You and I have had several conversations. I do believe that you are in 250 now episodes, I think you're my guest who is the furthest away from where I am at. It's quite remarkable that we're having this conversation for my listeners, you might appreciate the fact that we're literally 12 hours away. Matt, tell us who you are. Tell us where you're at. And then we'll dive into our conversation.
Yeah. Cheers, Jason. Cheers for having me. Good to we've obviously chatted, done a podcast, now doing another the other way. So yeah, good to catch up. And I'm Matt. I'm the co-founder of Task. I'm in Thailand. Right now in the north of Thailand, which I'm actually in a place called Chiang Mai, but this isn't where I live. I normally in a place called Pai, which is a smaller place about 130 k's north, but we have just we've just descended to the nearest city for 2 months with our three dogs because we have this huge environmental issue here actually that we deal with every year where the farmers at this time of year burn all the waste crops, which is a project we're working on actually as a business. But it doesn't hit the news or anything, but the air quality up where I normally live is about four times worse than Beijing city air right now. So today I'm talking to you from Chiang Mai. We're here for 2 months, which is a bit further south. The air is marginally better here, hence my comments about the air purifier in the background before we started,
right, which you can't hear. So, Matt, tell me, in that introduction there, you told me that you represent a company called Task. Tell me a little bit about that real quick.
Yeah, cool. We're task.io. I say that because the word task is a very broadly word used. It's also it's our brand, obviously. We're a tech business that helps nonprofits engage teams via mobile, incentivize their actions, as a result, gather data that can be used for reporting, both kind of board management reporting, but also creating data-driven stories on dashboards to create, you know, confidence with donors, to help fundraising strategy, to basically kind of tie in the donor community to and bring them closer to the nonprofit and understand what they're up to. We've been around 2.5 years, so we are you know, still known as a startup. If you're a tech business, you're typically a startup for the first kind of 4 or 5 years. But we have survived the year of COVID, obviously, which is a good thing. And yeah, kind of found our feet now. And I suppose the only other thing to mention is we run on blockchain. It's one of these things that's a bit of a buzzword in the world, has been for a while. People always associate it to Bitcoin, but there are, you know, an abundance of other kind of uses outside of just Bitcoin in terms of blockchain. So that's a piece to the business in terms of being able to track activities and be transparent at what you're doing and report that back to donor communities.
So Matt, we like to ask our guest to come on the Fundraising Talent Podcast with a big idea or a bold opinion. Sometimes I, as the host, have no idea what your big idea or bold opinion is. So what do you got for us today?
So for me, and this is obviously central to everything I'm doing right now, which is this whole data-driven story thing. And I don't believe as a nonprofit, you know, in the future, you will be able to survive at all unless you have some sort of story to tell around data to your donors. What I mean by that, I don't want to get, you know, use the word data, people often kind of go to sleep. But what I mean is, if you're not telling the truth around what you're doing, it's going to be impossible to survive in the future because people expect now a level of transparency from where they're putting the money from what is happening. And I really think it'll be impossible to survive without that in the future. This being able to really, you know, really show that the money you're given, where has it gone? And being able to prove that in a very easy way without people digging into reports, but just being able to show that to the world.
You know, Matt, the couple of times you and I have talked, I've heard you say storytelling, I've heard you say data, and I've heard you say transparency, but I don't know that I sort of synced the three up. I have to say, when it comes to the nonprofit sector, I think we're perfectly capable and perfectly comfortable with the idea of storytelling. And I've heard plenty of people tell me they love data, but I don't know that they all go straight to transparency, though.
For me, the linkage between those three things and the disparity between them is that if you use the word storytelling and you talk about any business and, you know, particularly nonprofit, and you and I have talked about Charity Water, what a great job they do, and many nonprofits do a great job of storytelling.
Yeah.
Storytelling is what it is. I mean, an advert is storytelling, a video online. I mean, it's a promotional element to the work you're doing, you know, with the intention of putting out a hook, you know, bringing someone in, hopefully that they feel a synergy to that organization and donating. When I use then the word data, I mean, that's a different thing. When I'm talking about data and storytelling, I'm saying, hey, you know, let's take the truth about what you're doing and let's present that as a story. And, you know, we do that through dashboards, for example. So we've got you will look at a dashboard and you'll be able to understand the story of that organization based on the real data that they're pulling from the people from out in the field, from, you know, project databases, whatever it is. So, and then when I use the word transparency, I mean, that I suppose is ultimately what you are presenting there is if something is proven and I don't want to get too techie, you know, and I'm not techie, by the way, I work in tech, but my business partner is the techie one. I'm not the techie one, but you know, there are elements to being able to say, hey, this happened. It's an activity. I took your money. I've done this. It's proven and we've logged it on this ledger there. And anytime in the future, someone can go and check that,
Is transparency going to, which is a remarkable idea. And I could totally see where you're going with, I think you're basically saying that transparency is going to become the story and that whatever you're having to be transparent about, it better be a pretty damn good story. Is that what you're saying?
That and more. I mean, I think, you know, today you can, you know, you look in the US, you've got Charity Navigator, you've got GuideStar, you know, you can, if I'm making a decision to donate, I can, you know, most of the time I can go to one of those websites, get a rating. That for me is, there is levels of transparency in terms of that process. You know, I don't know exactly the requirements, but it's things like, okay, you get a rating because you provide quarterly reports, you're open with your financial statements. For me, I'm talking about something that is much more at the level of what is happening in real time, day to day. We look at this issue. I mean, I was just reading the news. We chatted about it before. I don't know them very well, but we charity, is that right? The used to be Save the Children, I think. They've had some issues around. I was reading this morning around a bunch of funds that have been into a project, I think in Africa, that it might have been doubled up or it was overspent. For me, that kind of stuff, that came out on a report, I think, years later. That's how it was recognized, published on someone's website. When I talk about transparency at a kind of real-time daily basis of being able to look at dashboards, you know, that would never occur because... And the other thing is these, you know, what about having I make a donation and I've got a direct link to maybe even an individual, you know, who's in the field doing the work. And it's not about spying. It's not about that. It's actually creating connections. You know, I make a donation. Hey, I can see this person here, you know, just did something with my funds. I can see it. I understand it. That's transparency, which, by the way, which is another subject, in many cases may actually remove a charity from the situation, because when your technology can kind of bridge things. Now, I'm not suggesting that's the way forward, but certainly in certain projects, you could see where you can connect an individual with a, you know, project in the rainforest, and you don't need so many steps in between. So, you know, funds get direct to the individual, the project. You can see how it's spent. You know, it's microfinance is probably a good example. They've done. Previously, they've had all sorts of issues actually with accounting, but transparency initially was pretty good with many microfinance platforms where you would see the actual individual, you'd see how your money was being used and spent.
I think, Matt, the issue I take with nonprofit organizations, I tend to be sometimes too much of a critic, but I think the issue that, or the accusation that I would make about nonprofit organizations, especially when it comes to the programmatic side, so whatever mission they're delivering on, is that is not that they're doing things that are wrong; it's they're just not really doing anything at all, or they're just not doing enough. And so I'm interested to hear sort of what your reaction is to that sort of that. I think there's a lot of charities on our planet right now that are just not doing much at all. And they're spending a lot of time that there's not a lot of data to input. And so is what you're suggesting that if they don't actually get more busy actually doing really world changing sort of things, that this sort of combination of storytelling and data and transparency is going to perhaps get them in a lot of trouble?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, you're probably privy to more examples like that. So I don't necessarily have them, but if I look actually at your real use cases of people, you know, we're working with, the whole notion of us working with someone from a tech perspective is that they want to engage their teams. They want to expose the activities online and show people what's going on, because they, you know, for them, they're motivated by the fact that, hey, you've given me a donation. I want to show you how it's being used. My story is important. You know, the impact I'm creating is important. Of course, there's a whole other level here of, you know, providing statistics around what happened versus providing, you know, statistics around the measure of the effect that had are also two. They're both a story around data. They're two different stories. And I think, you know, one is important for one reason, one's important for another reason. But I'm not sure if I'll answer your question, really. I'm going off a tangent. But for me, it's, I think there's a pressure. This maybe has come from the millennial generations down, probably. I think there is an expectation now, not just that organizations do the right thing, but that when donations are given, people understand how they're used. I mean, you know, they want to know what's happened. And to your point, I think you will not survive if, you know, if you're just, you know, a nonprofit, not just kind of meandering and not really having an effect. I think that'll be very, very hard to survive in the future. I mean, you know, businesses are so much more involved in the nonprofit sector than they ever were for a start. I mean, the old days of writing a you know, 10 grand CSR check had kind of gone. I mean, it's now organizations look at how do they integrate employees with, you know, effective nonprofits. And so I'm not privy, maybe, and I don't have lots of examples of seeing nonprofits that are necessarily not doing a lot. I just don't see those kind of organizations
thriving,
really.
You know, I've
worked with enough organizations. I've seen some pretty high performance organizations in my career, and I've worked for some of them, and I've worked for other organizations that seemed to be steeped in mediocrity. And I think that, and that tends to be one of the accusations that the general public sometimes levies at nonprofit organizations. It sounds as if the darker side of some of this fascination with storytelling and data, when you align it with transparency, when I put those, I think that's a pretty powerful, I just think that's a really powerful combination to sort of put together and say, okay, this is what we're going to get better at, but it's also going to mean you folks are really going to have to put it into high gear to demonstrate that you're actually changing the world. Is, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Yeah, you're right. But also maybe to look at it more simplistically. So if I look at, you know, a local charity that I do some work with, we support with tech, that they don't really need actually our technology. We're doing some kind of testing with them. They're very small, you know, one guy, one volunteer looking after animal populations in a town. But he's someone I know well. And we've been, you know, working with them to kind of do some testing on the platform. But it's interesting to look at, say, him, and then let's say his 10-year view is to become 50 times as big, which he does have ambitions around scaling. Today, he has no problem with telling his story via Instagram, with having really good relationships with donors, because he can pick up the phone to every single one. You know, he knows he's doing the right thing. When you scale that person to a charity that's doing the same thing but 50 times bigger, you do not have the capacity to do that. And I suppose I'm looking at it as a case of, let's say, for all intents and purposes, he scales, the intention is to do the right thing. You've now got a team of 50 volunteers, though, maybe 10 team leaders. You know what, that this kind of scaling of the transparency, it's very easy to be, you know, transparent when you're a one-man band and create trust. But this is what this is all about as well. It's about creating trust ultimately, because without trust, you can't continue to secure donations. But for me, maybe it's a scale thing. You know, as you become bigger, it's very difficult to solve those issues around, ultimately it's around donor relations. But for me, I'm looking at it through a lens of telling the right story around data, which leads to, hey, this is how your money's being spent. This is what we're doing. This is the impact we're having. And we're not just showing you that based on a 6-month or a 12-month report that is hard to sometimes kind of hang your hat on. You know, it's historical by that point anyway.
Is it also that, one of the things I've never been too satisfied with, and I've never really articulated this in any meaningful way, I never really had this conversation. I don't think I'm embarrassed to say that in the number of 250 plus episodes of this podcast, I don't think we've had a very robust conversation about transparency. But I wonder if part of the transparency that you're talking about, Matt, is the programmatic side of the transparency. Because when I think of the financial transparency, that when we think of Charity Navigator and some of these other watchdog groups, usually they're looking at data. They're pulling data from the 990 or something of that sort. It's usually financial data. It's usually very quantitative data. Mm. And it usually only requires that maybe the CFO to be involved. But what I think I'm hearing is, and certainly when you get to the place where storytelling is involved, unless all you're doing is telling a financial story, the transparency we're actually talking about is more qualitative and is more programmatic. It's actually the delivery of the mission. I think a lot of these watchdog groups have been criticized over the years of doubling down and drawing our attention to financial transparency. But I got to tell you, if you're a world-changing organization and you're actually changing lives, I don't know that I care all that much. If you're effectively changing lives, I don't know that I care all that much about the financial transparency, as long as I know that what you're doing with my money is actually changing the life of a human being. Is that the transparency you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it's both, but certainly what I'm talking about, yeah, it is the program transparency. Yeah, I don't want to answer the question with just a yes, but it is kind of yes, really. I mean, that is not the best conversation started, just a yes, but you're right, you're bang on. I mean, certainly the way we look at it, it is the, and that is the story as well. Now, but the difference is, yeah, you tell that story just by presenting the program. I do a video for 10 minutes, great. You tell that story by creating a story from the data, which is interesting, based on what's happening within the program, the performance, then you have a story that's being leveraged via data, and it is around transparency. I mean, the other thing is that I think this word transparency, I don't think there's a need either as an organization to be saying, hey, we're transparent. You know, it's not really about that. It's just that is the byproduct of doing this, right? Of really, you know, gaining insight into what's happening on the ground with a program, with individuals, that volunteers or, you know, employees of a nonprofit, whoever they are, then and you know, being able to connect all these people, gather the data, tell the story, you know, both visually and numerically through dashboards, then yeah, that is transparency. But it's not necessarily pushed down people's throats as transparency. It's just what it is as a default, and what you're actually doing is creating a bond and trust with the people that, you know, have pledged some sort of support to your organization. Now, you could also have the financial indicators in there and the annual report, because there is a connection between the two. They're not, you know, independent things, but to your point, yeah, it's the program that you're putting out there into the world and showing people what's happening.
So is the implicit risk in what you're talking about, Matt, is the underlying risk that because that we've been talking about sort of the story and that I feel like we have a continuum here that ought to be crafted visually and put on a logo or something, but is part of the implicit risk in this is that it's one thing to be storytellers and it's one thing to be transparent, but if you're not the one actually doing this storytelling and being very transparent, the data, I think also what you're saying to me, Matt, is that the data is out there and it's accessible. And if you're not telling the story with it and therefore being transparent, somebody else is going to get hold of that data and tell your story for you. Is that essentially part of what you're getting at as well?
I don't know what you mean. You mean
I'll use an example. So I was in education for quite some time, spent 10 plus years working with private schools. The data is out there. And so, and oftentimes organizations are tracking data and we now have these ways to gather so much data. Mm. And oftentimes it's data that's, you know, originally, and I work in education now, you know, with where I teach, we're gathering so much information, but oftentimes this information has to then eventually be given to outsiders. And so all this information is being gathered somewhere. If you don't take the opportunity to tell really good stories with the data that you're essentially creating, isn't part of the risk that somebody's going to tell that story for you?
I don't somebody think out- so. I think, no, I suppose for me, I mean, the way I'm looking at it is, and this is very, I suppose, you know, relevant to what we do as a business, but I'm talking about data that is relevant to the work you are doing as an organization, you know. So, you know, the risk is if you don't have that story, if you don't have that data to validate what's going on, and you're not really, you know, putting it out there, the risk is that you're not going to garner more support. I don't think the risk is certainly what I'm talking about here. It's less of a risk of someone, you know, eating your breakfast as a risk of you, you know, not getting your breakfast delivered. That's a terrible analogy, but you know what I mean.
But okay, so it's the other charity down the street. So what you're saying is the risk is the other charity down the street who is able to make a more compelling case because they track their data in some much more meaningful and robust way and utilize it to put in front of prospective donors.
Definitely, 100%. And I think to use a parallel in the business world right now, and what I mean, this is statistically backed up, and maybe actually it's one of the same thing. But if you look at the decisions millennials and below make around the businesses they work for, right? I am, you know, in the old days, I mean, 20 years ago when I was kind of forging out my software sales career, you know, I was always looking at what's the commission package, what can I earn? And I was never looking at, you know, what are the ethics of this business? You know, it was never a consideration of my what I had in my head when I was being interviewed 20, 25 years ago. Things have changed, of course. But today it's a different workforce, right? The decisions that it's the same with people buying brands. And I think brands will fail in the future if they're not shown to be doing the right thing within, you know, people and planet. Now, you know, of course, not across the board, but predominantly, if you're not a brand in the future that has a kind of good ethical footholding and is showing transparently what you're doing, and this goes into a whole area around things like supply chains and how you're treating, you know, third world workers, and there's a whole kind of nest of things here. But I think it comes down to the same motivating factors, and if we're talking specifically around nonprofit, and those same people making those decisions with who they work for, who they buy from, who they donate to, want points of truth that they can hang their hat on before continuing to, you know, to fund and support those organizations. So I think it's across the board. It's not really just a nonprofit thing here, although we are, you know, very much talking about nonprofits.
So how does this differ from on our conversation? During our previous conversation, you heard me sort of make this comparison to this idea of sort of fundraising sort of growing up, right? And I tend to think that a lot of our fundraising practices are still sort of rooted in this tradition that we're like our expertise is very similar to, you know, the Mad Men or something, you know, like, you know, 1950s and 60s ad guys or something, which is not the world we live in today, right? We're not Don Draper. Is that his name? We're not Don Draper anymore. So what is that? What is that expertise? What is that? What has so fundamentally changed that's not going to allow sort of the Mad Men, you know, advertising, marketing, sort of PR? Because I know all of this is sort of, I know everything that you're talking about is shaking them up too. If it's shaking us up, it's totally shaking their world up.
I don't have the answer, but I can tell you some really, you know, some real interesting insight I've had into it that I suppose backs it up. But, you know, I was on a podcast with a guy in the UK who runs one of the most popular sustainability podcasts. So it's all around environment, you know, parallel sector, same kind of stuff. And he was talking about one of the biggest corporate law firms in London, how they now do a risk profile of a business that they're taking on is whether that business has a mandate of how they're dealing with their environmental impact. So what I mean is, in the past, it would be, you know, what's the financial stability of this organization? Can they pay? You know, their risk profiling, one of the top ones now is, has this organization, you know, considered the way they're treating the environment? Because if they haven't, they're at massive risk because of the way, you know, the way that their clients, their consumers, depending on what kind of business they are, is going to deal with them. So that probably doesn't necessarily answer your question, but just as an example, so, you know, to answer the question, what has changed? For me, it's just an attitude in terms of the, you know, in terms of the generations that are coming up. And I'm not saying this is obviously across the board. There are,
well, the absence.
Yeah.
Okay. When I think of Don Draper and when I think of Mad Men, they were great storytellers, but there was no data, and there was very little transparency. So that's what I'm getting at. It seems to me like we haven't quite, because I still see us sort of playing the madmen sort of game in our sector. I still think, for example, my colleagues in direct response think that they can just write really good copy and appeal to donors. And I just don't, I think that's great storytelling, but I don't know that when you combine it with data and transparency, I don't think that's going to work long term.
There's an interesting element. Just like you said, we talked on our podcast about the adolescence of the fundraising industry.
Yes.
And I've spent quite a bit of time inside, but actually, funnily enough, many of the characters, and you'd know a lot better than me, the people that do those jobs, what were their backgrounds? Because many of the people I met in fundraising were much more traditional in their approach. They'd come from kind of older school backgrounds. They weren't kind of, necessarily up-to-date, tech-savvy people, not to knock them at all. It's just what is the demographic out of interest of what's made up the kind of fundraisers over the last you came from a fundraising background, right? It might just be a cultural thing of where those people have come from that have made up that kind of space of fundraising.
Yeah, it's not so much. It is. It's like I said on the other podcast when we are having, for the sake of our listeners, we've got two back-to-back conversations. We don't even know which one is really part one or part two, but we'll both broadcast.
That's why I just asked you a question. Apologies. I turned the time.
Yeah, but it's the idea that a lot of our original champions of fundraising came from the PR marketing and advertising world. What I call, what I'm referring to is sort of the Mad Men era.
Yeah.
And their expertise and their specialist and everything that they would have sort of been admiring in college and the classes they took, that sort of the seminaries they went to, if you will, whatever sort of dogma and religious tradition they were sort of steeped in, as if that was their religion. That's sort of where they were trained up. And what I hear, and right now, because the profession finds itself where it does, and because fundraising hasn't, as I'm suggesting, hasn't necessarily grown up, we don't even really have much of a school. We don't have a seminary, if you will. We don't have a way to sort of train up our priests in the sense that I'm describing. And so I'm wondering sort of where they're going to emerge from. And I'm kind of wondering how they're going to be particularly different, because Matt, all our to use that very simple framework of data, of storytelling to data to transparency, it just seems like we've been betting on storytelling for so long, and I don't think we've got a real good handle of the implications of combining it with the other two.
It's a good opening question you asked me, because it got me thinking about it. Because I'm using this word all the time, and actually, words are interesting things because people have different perceptions on them. When I use this word storytelling, I'm very much using it in the context of what we do as a business and how we take data and how you present something. And I look at it as a story, funnily enough. And you're right. It's storytelling itself has been around a long time, and maybe it's not the right word. I don't know. It's interesting.
Oh no, don't pick on yourself. It's the right word. I guarantee you it's the right word, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Here's why I know it's the right word. Because I know that the guys and the gals that don't like what I do and say in this space, they're extraordinary storytellers. We have extraordinary storytellers in our space that are oftentimes the people that fundraisers gravitate towards for their expertise. But the problem is just like Don Draper, all he was an extraordinary storyteller. They didn't have the means in the 1950s and 60s to track data with which to back up whether his story was working.
Yeah, right.
And therefore he wasn't held accountable to a level of transparency. And so what you're saying to me is that, you know, let's say, for example, I've got all the training and the credentials that any one of these old school fundraising types that know how to write really great direct mail copy might have. But the reality is, being just a great storyteller isn't really, that's not all it is.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's, yeah, that's the nail on the head, really. I think the, yeah, being able to, a story that is backed up by verifiable data. So, you know, and it doesn't even necessarily, the way it's delivered to you in a way is in a way that you know it's verifiable, so that the story has, you know, a level of credibility that, you know, is what you need. I mean, yeah, I think that is the key thing here, really.
Did you watch The Mad Men?
It's funny you mention it. You know why? Because a good friend of mine who's a journalist brought it up on a phone call last week. And he was like, he got to watch Mad Men. I was like, he said, you've got to watch it because it's where you came from. So my own journey out of, like, I was working.
All you've got to do, just watch the first, three or four episodes. It's advertising and marketing gurus coming out of the 1950s and 60s when they could craft, you know, stories and put them in magazines and put them on billboards and so forth. And they could convince their clients to pay these ridiculous fees and so forth and so forth. And it was a remarkable A&E, I believe it was an A&E series that for like 8 or 10 years. But Don Draper, we've got lots of people in our space that have sort of carried along sort of a Don Draper sort of persona. And I'm sure other industries that are sort of coming out of that. Here's the thing, Matt, I had a conversation with a previous guest here on the podcast recently, and it's the idea that expertise, when it comes to people who are in these consulting and advisory type roles, somebody calls somebody like me in, as the profession itself matures. So as the people who are actually on the payroll get smarter, that means that the advisors, the consultants, the trainers who get called in have got it. The bar's just got to be even more, all the more higher.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And people have heard me say this on the podcast many, many times. I don't know if my colleagues in the consulting, advising sort of training space are measuring up, because they're still stuck on an old school definition of fundraising expertise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I think,
and it's all largely based just on being really good at storytelling, but not necessarily being really good at combining that with data and transparency.
And the other thing here, I think, is you can't avoid the digital angle of what's happened and still happening. And I'm using the word storytelling, but I'm actually not talking about anyone telling a story. I'm talking about a story being told through the combination of the right information from the right people that's fed in, you know, into a dashboard, or, you know, however else you want to present it. But yeah, I mean, storytelling.
Oh shit. It's a story that tells itself, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's nothing without the people elements, don't get me wrong, but, you know, to our comments on technology on the last podcast, but it's nothing without the people, but it's a story that, yeah, is told through the amalgamation of the right connections, the right technology, to a place where it's, you know, accessible instantly, and you know, oh, this is what's happening, this is what's going on. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a fascinating thought, that some of our so yeah, again, turn back the Matt, if you turn back the clock and you think about what they did, what Mad Men was doing, what they were able to do, what those guys were able to do, guys and gals, what they were able to do is they were able to essentially craft a story that they wanted to tell. What you're suggesting is the story is going to tell itself, and it's going to tell itself accurately, and the systems are going to more than likely already be in place, and you're going to probably already have wanted to buy them and pay, and you're going to already put the dashboards on your websites and stuff. And it's going to be an accurate story.
100%. Yeah. Do you want a job? You just sold it. It's great. There you go.
Am I your business development guy here?
There you go.
If I just totally crafted your business development strategy here in the U.S. So we've got about 5-10 minutes before our listeners really let us go. So tell us about this product. Tell us about Task.io. Because I'm sure some of our listeners who've hung on with us are going to want to know about it.
I don't want to do a sales pitch, but you're allowing me to a certain degree, hey?
You've got about 3 minutes.
very much along the lines of what I've been talking about. So, we do a couple of things. We will sit with a nonprofit, help to craft a story through a dashboard based on the data they have. Data might be coming from, old reports, spreadsheets, up-to-date stuff. We then have a mobile device where you, on our project page, you can create a project where you're engaging teams that really glue together that story. And the teams typically are volunteers that are running a program. And that actually is the real kind of core. I mean, I'm calling it the glue, but it's the he puts a story together. So as an example, you know, we're working with use ActAsia as an example out of the UK. They run a number of different programs. One of them is a animal welfare program where they're providing neutering for cats and dogs. They're also giving life-saving operations to animals. The teams of vets are in another location, in this case in China, but it could be wherever else. They have all this data they want to push out onto a dashboard. Some of it they have. It's historical data around what they did last year, you know, the performance, number of operations, number of training sessions they train the vets. But the key thing is, getting that data real time right now that's happening every day. So the vets have a project on their smartphone where they're in an operation. They open up the app. Hey, I need to fill out this form, some images, details on the animal, some feedback. They get some points for doing it. It shares that to social media. It shares it to the project page. So if you go in as a donor, you'll see, hey, here are the vet's hero pages. I can see what this vet's doing, how many neuterings they've performed. I can also, if I want to get right down to the kind of bits and bolts, I can see the kind of tracking data. Your end result then is, you know, a kind of full dashboard. There's different elements to it, but as you can hear, very much we're talking about this storytelling. The storytelling for me is the dashboard, but it's also the kind of automation of information going to different social media channels. So if you look at the problem for this program manager, actually, before we work with them, they would have this information, but it would be emails from different volunteer vets. It would be WeChat conversations. It would be some stuff over social media. You know, it's not a coherent story that they can tell, and the administration overhead is huge. So, you know, what they end up using technology for is to automate the telling of this story through the connection of these vets. They also, the other important thing here, I think, I mean, in this example, you're talking vets. It could be another type of program, but in this example, there's 50 vets. They create a working environment for these vets that's improve. These vets feel connected now to their program manager in a different location via technology. They've got points and rewards. There's other ways to bring in suppliers that can actually sponsor the activities. That's not necessarily a bonus sponsor, but it's a reward sponsor. So there are other kind of feature elements to this that create kind of happier teams, a kind of more uplifted workforce, if you want to call it workforce. So yeah, that's, I don't know how many minutes I took, but that's essentially what we do. And it's much better told through images and having a look at, kind of use cases, customer stories. So
fascinating, Matt. It has certainly been a pleasure to have you as our guest today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. If somebody wants to reach you, how would you suggest that they do that?
I'll leave my email address if people want to. If you want to visit the website, it's very simple. It's task.io. And if anyone wants to contact me, my email address is matt@task.io. So yeah, very, very simple to get in touch.
And Matt, you and I connected on LinkedIn. I'll also put that link in the show notes as well.
Yeah, cool. Sounds
certainly been a pleasure.
Cheers, Jason. Appreciate it.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.